Listen here.
Go ahead.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountain, Shenandoah River. Life is older there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, blowing like a breeze. Country road,
oh, yeah.
Take me home.
Know what you're saying?
To the grave. Should have been home yesterday. Yesterday.
Now hold on, you got it.
All my memories gather around her. Miner's lady, stranger to blue water. Dark and dusty, painted on the sky. Misty taste of moonshine. Tear up for my
now you stop
country road, y'all. All right, take me home. Take me home, to the place I belong.
West Virginia.
Take me home,
get on home.
Country road.
Now put your hands together.
Country road. Take me home, to the place.
Take Me Home, Country Roads, sung by Ray Charles, my man Ray. Ray went through some struggles with addiction. We'll talk about that on another show because he has a rich history that I'd like to get into one day. But today's show is going to be about recovery-ready communities. And so we're gonna have a guest come on this morning that kind of knows a bit about that. And so we're going to have him kind of enlighten us today here on Recovery Radio. And my name is James Boyd, and I'll be your host. I'm sitting here with masterful John Case on the keyboards over there. He works his magic. He's the responsible for making this magic happen here on Recovery Radio.
You just have to have enough of Love Potion Number 9.
Love Potion Number 9. No, but that's a great one. That's a wonderful song. You know, when I'm listening to the oldies but goodies in my car, I crank it up, man, all the way to the maximum. But I have to be riding alone. Sometimes I have my little Yorkie with me, and he goes under the seat.
He doesn't like that much
noise. He doesn't like all that noise.
No.
But that's my car, and he chose to ride in it, so he got to put up with me and my loudness.
Well, now, did he really choose?
Yeah, he always, as soon as I open the screen door, whenever I pick up my keys.
Even though he knows what may happen, audio-wise.
Huh? But they're pretty smart animals because he knows that I won't keep it up that loud for that long. Maybe one song will jump in there on him. And And what was that song you just named? That would probably be one of
Love Potion Number Nine.
Love Potion Number
Love
Nine.
Love Potion Number Nine.
Yeah, me and John gonna get this singing group going in Eastern Panhandle. We're talking about recovery ready communities, and I believe that if your community needs to be recovery ready, then you have to have James Boyd and John Case. James Boyd on the microphone, John Case on the keyboards, pumping it up for you here in beautiful Bolivar, West Virginia, right up from Harper's Ferry. Hey, you know, John, this morning I stopped in, on my way down, I stopped in Charlestown, and I was looking for, my brother told me, because he's into broadcasting, he said, get you a lemon before you go on air and put some of that lemon juice in, it'll knock away that buildup on your the back of your tongue from your morning coffee. And you won't be doing that coughing and stuff. And I tried it, and it works.
You won't be having your tongue get in the way of your words. I mean, you know, if you add the problems with your tongue to the problems of your brain, it can sometimes multiply.
So I get here, I have multiple problems.
Well, I can't.
But it's not happening today.
It's like when Trump tried to say that... he was trying to say the summit was really good, okay? But he ended up saying the summit was really good. And then he stops and he says, summit.
Yeah, summit.
Summit. Summit.
Yeah, you know,
Your lips could stick together,
together. If you're dry mouth, especially when you're afraid, your armpits start itching.
Oh, God,
You know, and I looked at our president yesterday, and God bless him, I felt so bad because I was thinking that maybe, Putin seems to be the bully. I'm afraid that at some point Putin is going to take that jiu-jitsu thing out and flip Donald Trump over into the... you remember that time?
Sure, yeah.
They were throwing shoes at the president in one country. Somebody threw a shoe.
That was at Bush when he was in Iraq. One of the reporters was, because he was saying something.
That's
ridiculous.
Symbolic of something, isn't it?
I don't know. Was it Bush or was it his guy that he appointed to be the governor of Iraq afterwards? I can't remember that.
That
might have been him. You know, but
shoes. And I'm thinking because Donald, as big as he is and as much as he towers over that man, I get a feeling that he's afraid to cross this guy in terms of, you know, maybe fisticuffs and stuff.
I'm sure that Putin would use a knife. I mean,
Putin has a jiu-jitsu thing.
He's in good shape, clearly.
I don't think Donald can do that.
I mean,
come from that.
What is he, 65? He got to be approaching
Donald
70.
Donald might pull out a knife because, you know, he's from New York. He's probably got a switchblade or something in one of them big suit jackets he's putting on.
He has a lot of security with
maybe
him.
Maybe he has something under that tie.
You know, the guy that's out here sometimes that does my gardening?
Yeah.
You know, my buddy Ray. You know, now Ray was for a union carpenter in New York and used to do, for a while, they did gigs for Trump properties in New York, you know, building stuff in the building, whatever, but he wouldn't pay them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he'd shortchange him for half the hours or something like that, right? You know, not pay him. And so they'd say, well, screw you, you know, and all that, you know. And then he'd start sending them threatening letters, you know. He had an army of lawyers around him all the time, and he also had a lot of physical security.
Yeah, so Putin, but Putin has, no, what I'm saying is, you know, they used to do it back in the olden days. They said, okay, you send out your best guy, and... we're going to send out our president.
Of course,
but the Native Americans did that. Didn't one guy ride out on a horse? Or is that just in the movies? What is that?
I don't know what that is, man. I'm not sure what really happened back there.
I mean, I used to watch a lot of black and white, you know, the
old the winners write histories, right?
Winners write histories.
Yeah, I mean, mostly.
What do the losers do?
A lot of people, sometimes people just burn their stuff, you know, but... well, whoever wants to hear from them again. I mean, you know, we thought that happened with the Confederacy.
Mm-hmm.
We thought. I'm not sure now. Maybe, but might be some. Some of that coming back. But still, you think that something's gone, right? And although, when I was growing up in the South, it wasn't gone.
Yeah.
I mean, the attitude was it had, in some ways. Hadn't much improved in some areas, you know, really.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, my sponsor says, you know, don't be anxious for nothing, B. Don't be afraid of this stuff. Just do what it is. So I'm trying to stay in my lane with the recovery radio.
Well, you got to.
And try and
right? I mean,
you know, help the people right here in West Virginia where I live and see if we can get something going, man.
If you shut up, it won't help.
It won't help. No. If you shut up, it won't help. Well said. Who said that, John Case? You know, hey, artfully chosen words. Debbie, I hope you're listening because we have some artfully chosen words for you. And Debbie has a business. She writes cards like Christmas cards, but I think hers are much healthier than Hallmark cards. And they're much less expensive and they're personalized. So I would invite you. I'm going to get that information. So if you want to get some different sort of personalized greeting cards and holiday cards, you can ring up Debbie. But yeah, so our show this morning is going to be about what a recovery community looks like. And I'm going to be putting together a series that's centered around that topic. What does a recovery-ready community look like? And if you would like to reach out to me, you can reach out to me at the Boyd, that's BOYDBW, at MSN.com. And just send me an email and, you know, let me know what your thoughts are. And I'm going to give you the call-in number. But I posted this morning about how to listen live. And recovery, how to listen live and how to get to the, you know, because if you're like I am or like I used to be, I was technically challenged. So I would believe that a lot of people really don't, especially a lot of our seniors, that wouldn't be me and John. We're not seniors yet. I don't think in our spirit we're not seniors. But we don't know how to navigate that now, system to get to the player.
But now, James,
yes,
don't you find that at our age that people start looking at your relatives and your kids and your cousins?
How long you're gonna live.
Well, they start checking you out every now and then. How you doing? You need a ride? You know, or are they? You know, they wonder. You know, start to wonder when you like forget something. Did you forget it because you just forgot it, or did you forget it because now you're stepping into Alzheimer's or something? Yeah. It's like that.
What we say, what I usually say is, oh, that's natural. It happens. Everybody forgets. But I'm noticing little things. But my dad, if they're looking at your relatives and your family, and my dad is 86, and he's a pistol. You know, he's 86 years old. He's cutting other people's lawns, and he's, you know, he's repairs everything. His girlfriend is younger than I am, and her name is Doll. How you doing, Doll?
Oh, right there.
So sometimes I see her, I don't know what to call her. I don't know whether to call her mom or what, you know, because, you know, she's not my mother, but that's his girlfriend. So he feels like at his age, he wants to enjoy his life. And, you know, if somebody's willing to be with an 86-year-old man, old man, you know, I say more power to him. Well,
absolutely. Every day is gravy, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, and if you want to call in at some point, you can dial 304-885-0708 and tell us, how you feel about the show, how we can improve on our topics, how we can get more content, what your concerns are, if you have any ideas. What does a recovery-ready community look like in your mind? What would it be? You know, and so these are the things that we're going to be talking about this morning. As a matter of fact, my guest, who is a pretty interesting fellow, he works at the Renovo Center, which is in Kearneysville, and they have a menu of items that you can look at when you decide to use their facility. And they offer multiple nutrition group counseling and no shame. It's evidence supported. And but he's going to share all of that with you, and hopefully he'll call in. But if he does not call in, I got all the information right here in front of me, so I'll share that back with you. But he should be calling in.
I was going to. You got time for a question about the recovery community here?
Yes. Recovery ready communities.
Now, I mean, I think you were mentioned last week, but I think I'd heard about it before from. Actually, we had a guy on the program, Zucky and I used to do, from, he had just done a TED talk that was related to this long-standing study on addiction, which was based on rats, okay, most of the data that had been gathered about the impact of behavior. And so they would have it set up a bowl of, they would set up two sources of water, okay? One would be plain water, and the other would be water laced with, opiates or heroin or maybe even, I think it was heroin. Anyway. And of course, in the case, the rats would gradually move over to the heroin and eventually expire. Okay. Well, 50 years later, somebody looked at that experiment and said, you know, that there's a lot of holes in that experiment.
Okay.
And for example, there was nothing for the rat to do in the cage except either drink water or heroin. Drink water or heroin. There wasn't. I mean, there was a little rinky-dink thing that could go around, but that was it.
That was it.
That was nothing. There was any other rats there? Only one rat. Okay. So he reconstructed the experiment. Okay, but in this, he created what was called. He called it Rat Park.
Rat Park.
Right, Rat Park, and in there, same choice, okay, of for liquid anyway. Mm-hmm. There was other food around, but liquid was water or heroin, heroin water, okay?
Heroin water.
Okay, and so now, but this time, the rats had a whole great and little environment, you know, they could dig holes, they could have families, all that. None of them chose the heroin.
Yeah, the Rat Park experiment.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Boy, that's a good one, John. The Rat Park experiment. You can find the Rat Park experiment. You go to YouTube.
She's on here.
Good morning, caller. How are you? Is this my...
Hello, is that James?
Yes, it is. It's James. How are you? Chess?
Yeah, this is Chess Yellett.
Okay.
I guess I should say MD.
MD, yeah. That would be a good start for us.
So how are you today?
I'm just fine. I'm just fine, Dr. Yellett. Chess... You've told me to call you Chess.
You can call me Chess, please.
Yeah, I'm just fine, and so I'm so glad you called in, and we're going to open up this discussion. I don't know if you've got
a
chance to...
discussion of MAT is really long due, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. So go ahead, tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us a little bit of background on yourself.
Thanks for asking me to call in. I'm a family doctor. I'm what I call semi-retired, and... That means I treat everybody, you know, all ages, all sexes, cradle to grave, I guess, is more polite than the other way. And basically, I treat lots of different illnesses, and anything that's common, I treat in depth. And addiction is very common. Okay. So I think I've been at that. I've been treating addictions, opiate addictions, for about 25 years, starting in the pre-medication era. And... you know, I've always really enjoyed the relationships I've had with my patients. It's been really satisfying and enjoyable. Of course, when people are coming in saying they just need medicines for pain, that's a problem when it's really a drug problem. But it's been really great treating folks. Now, starting 25 years ago, practice was more like just detoxing people over and over again. We used to do outpatient detox for alcohol and opiates, obviously. And it was unfortunate. You know, people would struggle through the week, but then do well for a while, go to their AA and NA meetings, thank goodness, and then relapse. And I can remember, you know, just over and over relapsing. Now, when Suboxone came by, it was just a tremendous change. People just settled down and were fine. And actually, my first experience with with buprenorphine was about in 1998. It came out as a pain medicine in a shot. And when people were detoxing, we could give them one shot and they'd feel fine the next day. And essentially, it would flush out all the opiates. But since it was just one shot, they'd usually relapse about as often as anybody else. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so Suboxone came around about 16 years ago. I think I was one of the first people to start prescribing it here. And just a sea change. People would stabilize. Their lives would get better. They'd go to work, take care of their kids, live in one place, not mm-hmm. have to move. So it was really great.
Mm-hmm. So now tell me, what is, define the common ailment for us?
Oh, well, it's any common disease like mm-hmm. diabetes, high blood pressure, asthma, just the thing, you know, urinary infections, cold coughs, pneumonia, all those things that happen are common. And as a family doctor, we are trained to take care of those illnesses in depth, mm-hmm. you know, diabetes really completely. And the same thing, and addiction is one of the most common illnesses there is.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that's something that family doctors should be taking care of well.
Mm-hmm. So when people look at addiction, when they use the words addiction, and so you're talking about anything, because most of the time when you say addiction to people, they think in drugs and alcohol right away. You know, never mention cigarettes, never mention, you know, I got some guy, I believe he's just addicted to lying. I don't know. And I'm not being facetious either. I mean, it starts off with a good conversation, but he has to have a lie. And when you fact check him, you figure out it's one or two lies.
Lie.
Yeah, he has to put a lie in there somewhere. And so would that be?
Well, part of addiction is denial, or I guess we could say putting it in shadow, where you deny it or repress it or really unconscious of it. Mm-hmm. Addiction in the end is, sort of a bad relationship to anything where you do it more and more. In a minute, I'll sort of read out all the definitions of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I want to relate that to mm-hmm. buprenorphine or Suboxone.
Okay, well.
So people can be addicted to arcade games. I was at one point seriously addicted to an arcade game. Could not put it down. And it finally was such a non-profit, they took it away and I stopped using it.
Okay.
And there's gambling and, you know, and then, of course, drugs,
mm-hmm.
danger, sex, mm-hmm. addiction. There's lots of different kinds of addictions.
And so
maybe we should say there's an addiction to power, and some politicians have that addiction and do bad for all of us.
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
yeah.
You have more questions?
Yeah, pre-med era. Talk to
What's
me
that?
About the pre-med era.
Oh, yeah. That was before Suboxone came
uh-huh.
around. Now, Trexone, which is the same thing as Vivitrol, has been around for, almost 30 years,
mm-hmm.
Maybe even 35 years. But it was not a very successful medicine as a pill because it has a lot of unpleasant side effects, and very few people would actually just stay on it,
mm-hmm.
even though it's quite effective for alcohol and opiates. People wouldn't stay on it because of the side effects.
Okay.
And except for doctors and lawyers, they'd lose their license if they didn't stay on it. So they did, mm-hmm. not many others.
Okay.
And that era was before mm-hmm. we had many effective medicines. There were a lot of medicines to relieve the symptoms of withdrawal. None of them very good. You probably know about clonidine mm-hmm. and Pentol and you know, mm-hmm. stuff for stomach, stomach aches, stuff for aches and pains, stuff for diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we had back then. And I'd say the pre-medication era is pre-Suboxone, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting, Doc. So now talk to us a little bit about, take us on a tour, actually, of what your day is like at work, because you still practice, right?
Well, right now, I am retired.
Mm-hmm.
I volunteer over at the Renovo Center 2 half-days a week,
mm-hmm.
and I'm really happy if I can keep that down to 20 hours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Basically, I stay here until everybody's seen. I just really need to help take as many people as can fit in the door.
Yeah.
Renovo Center is a really great place. I came over here, just talked to them about helping them out with lab work a couple of years ago, and I could see people who were caring and not judgmental
mm-hmm.
and really wanted to do their best. So I offered to come and help with the medication treatment.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the main reason I'm doing this is because too many other doctors won't do it. Suboxone is very effective, but there's also an awful lot of stigma about it at many levels.
How so? I mean, what are some of the stigmatizing
Well, I would say most of my patients will say, I've gone to NA meetings and someone will be criticizing using Suboxone, saying it's just another addictive drug, just another addictive drug, that kind of thing.
Well, that's more or less misinformation.
Because Suboxone is not an addictive drug.
Yeah.
So it does have a withdrawal, but not an addictive
drug. So we need to get this information to more people, in my assessment.
Yeah. Well, I think this is something we really should go through. I'm going to read off the criterion for addiction.
Go ahead.
Okay?
Go ahead.
And then I'm going to go through these. One is tolerance. Yeah, then withdrawal, then taking more of it for longer periods of time than intended, a persistent desire to cut down or control the use, spending a great deal of time to get the drug, giving up social, occupational, or recreational activities because of drug use, and using it despite knowledge of having it, you know, having damage from it. And going through all those, Suboxone does not have a tolerance. You take two, and that's it. You can take 10. It doesn't do any more than two. People don't build up their dose and take more and more.
Okay.
It does have a withdrawal. So do many other medicines, like blood pressure medicines.
Sugar.
Almost all psychiatric medicines have a withdrawal. And a few blood pressure medicines, like beta blockers, if you stop them suddenly, you'll feel uncomfortable, shake, that kind of thing. And, you know, taking larger and larger amounts, nope. People take a certain amount of Suboxone, then not four. Desire to quit, cut down. I've noticed that almost none of my patients want to stop Suboxone unless they're being criticized for it. And that's where the stigma comes in. A lot of people just don't like, you know, their relatives, they'll give them a hard time, say it's just another addictive drug, which it's not, okay? Do people spend a lot of time finding Suboxone? Well, if they have it prescribed, no they don't, they come to their visit and they get it, and that's done. Do people give up part of their life, the enjoyable parts of their life and important parts of life? No. Everyone I've seen who's gone on to Suboxone has had a much better life. They started doing more of the things they enjoy. They started working. They started taking care of their kids where they didn't do too well before. So there's another criterion. Continuing it despite knowing that there's a problem with it. Well, there isn't a problem with it, so there's no reason to do that. And I'll also say a few more qualities, things that make a substance more addictive. First of all, it's how fast it works. So if you take a drag of a cigarette, you breathe in, it goes to your lungs, you breathe out, it's going through your lungs, you take the next breath, it's going through your heart, and about the time you let out the next breath, it hits your brain. That is fast.
Wow.
Same thing with injection.
How fast, you know, it works.
Fast, bang, it works.
How fast it works.
Creeps in over a couple of hours. Really slow.
That is so...
So that's something that's not like an addictive drug. You know, the next thing is that a person can control their dose of the medicine. So, for example, you can inject a little, you can inject a lot, you can smoke three cigarettes or one cigarette. And in the case of Suboxone, like I say, one or two, beyond two doesn't make any difference. And I think the most important thing about anything that's addictive is that sometimes it gives you a great feeling and other times it doesn't. So two examples, like gambling, for example, hey, sometimes you get a roll in a whole lot and most of the time you lose. And there's something else like selling cars, for example. Salesmen will sell a car or maybe have a day sell four or five and feel really hyped up and may come back to work for the next 2 weeks and not sell one. So sales could be an addictive substance, if you like, okay? So anyway, there's a lot of things that are addictive.
So let me ask you a question before we lose that.
Sure.
Endorphins, how does the salesman, the car salesman, the cigarette person, how does it affect your, talk about endorphins a moment with us, please?
Well, endorphins, you know, that this is a normal part of our brain chemistry, and when it's working well, people have a lot of things happen. They're very able to attach, have friendships. They're able to put up with frustration, like a, you know, if something's going wrong, they have a confidence that things will get better.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the worry that things will always be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stimulated by exercise, so it's good for attachment, it's good for pleasure. And when it's in balance, it's life's better. For those people who have that, they're very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. So
now, folks that have problems with trauma as a child, or even worse, trauma by being put in jail later for addiction, you know, this depletes the endorphins. They aren't working. And you can see that as a chemical problem. It actually can be seen as a brain structure problem. MRI scan, I can't tell you the exact spot in the brain, but things are smaller or larger.
Mm-hmm.
In those parts of brains that control emotions and pleasure and motivation. But on, you know, a further way you could see it as well, then it's a psychological problem. Or you can say it's even a spiritual problem, because people who don't have this working well will feel like there's something missing. There's a hole in the soul.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what do you call that, depression or something?
Yeah, depression's very common.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really a lack of ability to trust.
Stimulations.
That lack of ability to have friendships and enjoy them.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, let me share something with you before we change gears here a minute. John Case and I, we were talking just before you called in about the Rat Park experiment. Do you have any knowledge of that?
The Rat Park experiment.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to go to that in detail, but basically it sounds to me like they put a healthy rat in a cage and offered the, you know, water versus some kind of drug, and the rat used a whole lot of the medicine or the drug, the narcotic, until they allowed the rat to mix with other rats and have fun and do lots of interesting things and have good food. And then most of them stopped that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that rat had been abused that bad, you know, kept alone in a cage for its whole life, if it wouldn't still be using drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially what they're saying is that the trauma is the cause of the psychic pain. And something like being put in prison is a huge trauma. And then people who have addictions often face, you know, a lot of stigma. They're put down. You know, the message of you can't even find a clean needle is really, it's as bad as you can get. It's like the society wants to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't see why anyone would want to attach to a society wants to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the constant hassles and violence that addicts face, and having to prostitution, all those horrible things that folks go through, are continued trauma. It's more and more and more.
Yeah, it's very, very good conversation, Doc. So our topic this morning is what does a recovery-ready community look like? And so you're taking us down the right path. Tell me what in recovery, in your mind, recovery-ready community would look like from A to Z.
Well, to me, I have the same definition of recovery that everybody in the 12-step community has.
Mm-hmm.
It's having a much better life, having attachments, being able to enjoy your life, not taking yourself too seriously, giving service, having a spiritual life. These are all wonderful things about 12-step recovery for those people who do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also know that if you're in a 12-step program, ask yourselves how many people stay a while and leave, how many people relapse while they're there, even though they're doing pretty well. I'll tell you about a man I knew back when who, his name is John. He is an alcoholic. I detoxed him at least 10 times. And every time he'd come back, he went to the Dawn Patrol meeting, 5 a.m., 365 days a year. He was dedicated to AA. And, of course, one day he said, "What do you know about 12 steps? And I said, "Well, John, I think there's 12 of them." And he took the big book of alcoholics and shoved it in my hand and said, "Read this," you know, which I did. And I found it is an amazing program.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll put a but on there. You got to ask how many people actually do it.
Yeah.
How many come and go in the meetings? And I think the fellows I've met that have been in AA a long time will say they come and go.
Uh-huh.
And they go more than they come.
Right.
So it's a great program, but I got to tell you, it's the exception.
It's the exception.
Now, as far as medically such treatment goes, I think, you know, in the media, I listen to NPR in the morning or whatever you listen to, you'll hear stories about people who have done well in recovery in the standard 12-step, non-medicated, no MAT recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really historic, you know, heroic stories.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the exception.
Yes.
And what we really don't need to hear too much about is the exception. I think you'll also, those who are in the on that side, you know, doing the work, know that when people go to detox or go to rehab, most of them come out and relapse very quickly. You know, my patients, they say, "Well, I've been in rehab 4 times."
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. What happened right after that? Well, I relapsed.
Uh-huh.
And rehab is very expensive. We're putting a lot of money into it.
Yes.
And if it doesn't work very often, we've got to ask, is there a better alternative?
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm seeing is that people that go into rehab, if they come out and they get a shot of Vivitrol or they come directly onto a Suboxone program, they do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't, their odds of relapsing are really high.
Yeah.
And some of those folks do stunningly well because they have a recovery community to come back to.
Yes, recovery-ready community.
And, you know, that's that support, you know, the attachment is so much part of of doing well and having those endorphins work well.
Yeah, yeah. So how can we best approach this situation? I know that question has been asked a million times because it's been going on, seems like, forever. What do you talk to me about how you would, if you had your way, how would you approach?
My way.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you that I think we in the United States are addicted to doing the wrong thing, you know? What's an addiction? Well, you just try harder and harder and do more and more and get a little reward here and there, right?
Yeah.
And mostly have pains. So we've been trying for 100 years to stamp out drugs, you know, to remove the drugs from the, you know, arrest people who are selling, stop them at the border, et cetera. And we're just as bad now as, actually, we're 100 times worse than we were 100 years ago. A lot of bad things have happened since then.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do seldom works. Okay. And I also got to tell you that I think MAT is, it's very good. It helps. It helps the individual person. But we need to do a lot more. There's a lot of stigma about it. I know if you read the media and that kind of thing, you will not hear about medication-assisted treatment.
Right.
I hear, you know, a story on NPR 3 times a week about how terrible it is. You know, the hand-wringing, the overdoses, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't hear, you know, medication-assisted treatment works. Mm-hmm. I don't hear it's recommended by every medical group. It's recommended by the government itself, the health departments that the state and federal government all recommend MAT as the first line of treatment.
Okay.
First line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if someone can go and do the 12 steps and recover, more power to them. They've got a better world for that.
So with the approaches that we're taking, would you find that we're being overwhelmed with the... I don't know. This thing is being exacerbated, I would say, in our approach. It seems
our approach is simply not working. We have to admit that.
And,
but of course, when you try something and you have what seems like a success, hey, you've nailed a drug dealer, you've confiscated this ton of drugs, it feels like a success, but it isn't.
Right.
So you're having that intermittent reward, like I said, with addictive substances. you know, so you think you've done well, but you really haven't, because mm-hmm. whenever you take drugs out of the system, those people who want them and mm-hmm. will pay a lot for them,
yeah.
Well, the people that are taking, the dealers that are taken away will be replaced,
yeah,
because there's a lot of money in it.
And that's kind of an understatement, isn't it? A lot.
Yes. Yeah,
there's
yes.
lots and lots and lots of money, as Steve Harvey would say. Talk to us again about the harm reduction program. How do you feel about that?
Well, and, its I think elements. That what I'm doing is harm reduction. Mm-hmm. My goal for treatment is that a person has a better life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care if people are using drugs. Well, I do care because we have standards that the state has set and the insurance company set
mm-hmm.
For use of other drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really mind if people use drugs as long as their life is okay and they're not bothering anybody else.
Okay.
makes sense. And there are plenty of people, probably about 2/3 of the heroin users, are not addicted.
Mm-hmm.
That means that all those things I was talking about, they'll use a certain amount. If they miss work on Monday because of it, they'll go, oh my goodness, and cut back. Same thing with alcohol. The minority of people are addicted. But of course, that's I guess I'm getting off the subject.
No, that's fine. I'm following it because there's been a yeah. lot of conversation around that very thing, and nobody has phrased it quite like you just did in my hearing.
Yes, even cigarettes, which mm-hmm. is the most addictive drug there is, back in the 60s, finally they put that little warning on there, mm-hmm. Surgeon General mm-hmm. says. And a lot of people just tossed their cigarettes out and said, hey, I had no trouble quitting at all.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, we know everybody else who says, I'm still thinking about cigarettes 20 years mm-hmm. later after I've quit.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. going on, mm-hmm. maybe I'm getting back to something. We really have, it's very difficult to treat people with medically assisted treatment, mm-hmm. Suboxone. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's largely because of stigma. The media simply don't cover it. You know, they just won't cover it.
Yeah.
I don't hear it. I mean, unless I send a letter to the local newspaper, they don't mention it. We hear a whole lot about the recovery community, about all these non-drug efforts or non-medicine efforts
mm-hmm.
That are not very successful.
Right.
Yeah, you know, you can also ask yourself, how many folks do you know that did real well in NA or AA for right. some years and then relapsed and died?
Mm-hmm.
And you've heard the story.
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Plenty of times I've heard that story. And so it seems to me, Chess, yeah. That we're changing directions in this country. It's very subtle, but directions are being changed
subtle.
Because, you know, I have talked to several clinicians such as yourself, and they talk about mm-hmm. MAT as being the way that they prefer to go. And because of the stigma and because it's not highly publicized as other avenues are, you know, it's kind of a slow process here. But, you know, I think we're gaining some ground. I really do.
I hope so. But yeah. you got to say that our overdose rate is still going up.
Yeah. Well, according to the...
Hepatitis rates are still going up.
According to the journal, the Martinsburg Journal, overdose and deaths are going down. And what do you
say?
Well,
that would be great.
Huh?
I think overall we're not seeing a great change.
Yeah. So nobody is fact-checking? How do you fact-check?
As MAT becomes available, we're going to see a lot better.
Yeah.
Because Suboxone, as you may know, it prevents overdose.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. If people are even taking a fairly small dose, like a half a strip a day, they almost can't overdose on that. They have to stop for a few days.
Yeah.
Get it out of there.
So when they come into your clinic for Suboxone, do you administer it right there, or do they take it home, or How does that happen?
It's a prescription. They get it at the pharmacy and take it home. Yeah.
Okay, and take it home. And
but I've never had a patient I'm continuing to treat have an overdose and die.
Mm-hmm. There's been rumors that
I've
they
never,
sell
never
it.
Heard
people
about
sell
it.
It.
And I'm talking to John Aldous, who never had a patient who died while being treated with Suboxone. Mm-hmm.
Do you know if it's being sold on the street or?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah. There's obviously a diversion of the drug, and of Suboxone.
Yeah, but that's
and of course. We have state regulations that if we have evidence of that, we really have to discontinue.
Mm-hmm.
Discontinue seeing a patient. I had to do that just now. I have a patient that's very obvious that she was not taking the Suboxone I prescribed and was taking opiates, and so she didn't have full strips. So they went somewhere, and they got diverted, so I had to tell her to go.
Okay. And how did that
happen? And hopefully she'll go into detox and come out, and we'll give her Vivitrol.
Yeah. And so in your, I'm looking at the mission statement. In the menu, it says renew. That's the first one. And I'm kind of drawn to that.
Are you talking about Renovo's?
Renovo's mission statement. It says renew, resume after interruption, reestablish a relationship. That's kind of what you were talking about, how people want a better life.
The attachment. People that, grow up with, parents that care about them and pay attention and, have lots of positive things in their life and reinforcement and people that care, don't very often have addiction problems.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the folks who have been through all that trauma and, been abused or neglected, or
how many Suboxone clinics
are likely to do it have addiction? Hey, go ahead.
How many Suboxone clinics or clinics such as the Renovo Center is around the area?
Well, I would say, I don't really know how many. I sent out letters to all the Suboxone clinics in the state for something I'll get to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was 180 different providers I sent to. About a third of those came back undeliverable.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, a lot of clinics go out of business. It's pretty hard to keep a clinic open. There's
Why
a whole
is
lot
that?
Of regulations.
Why? Because of
regulations. Paperwork to be due, get this approval, that approval, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And insurances sometimes just don't pay. For whatever reason, you got to fight uphill. Just to get me certified by Unicare took 6 months. I got an application form that I couldn't answer questions on it. Also, could not find anyone who would tell me how to answer them. It went on and on. That's just one thing for me. Doesn't matter to me personally, but certainly Renovo would like to get paid.
Yeah.
And if they're having trouble with that, there's trouble. Aetna just decided that Renovo was not going to be part of the program. They had plenty of providers.
Mm.
So,
so you have to be very selective.
People out there waiting in line to get into Suboxone treatment.
So if a person, help me understand something. If I'm a person coming in and I have no insurance, or I have insurance that your company does not accept, am I turned away?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, you're turned away from Renovo Center. This is a business. And there are a lot of people working here who have to make an income, and they have to bring in funds.
Yeah.
Now, you've got to remember that very few people don't have any form of insurance. When folks, Obamacare, thank goodness for Obamacare, a lot of people got signed up with Medicaid cards, for the first time. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't even know that their Unicare card or Medicaid card comes from Obamacare. Wouldn't have it without it.
Uh-huh.
I also predate the Obamacare era. I love it in some ways and don't in others, but let's just say people got signed up with insurance for it. So, if we see someone who has the wrong kind of Medicaid, we can say switch over to Unicare, and we usually tie them over for a little bit while they're doing that.
So how much is your time spent on actual paperwork?
I would say it's getting better, but I would say I've spent 200 hours on that in the last 2 years.
Okay. Is that excessive or is that a mild amount?
Yeah, it's very excessive. Extremely excessive.
Extremely.
The trouble is that when you do something online, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And it's if you try to do something online and you don't have anyone to call, anyway, I could go on, but I've spent way too much time.
Yeah.
Things have settled down. Okay. I'll just put it that way.
Okay. Well, that's good.
I'm not doing too much of it now, but
that is good to hear.
My boss, yeah. Melissa Schwartz, God bless her, is doing way too much. And she's under a lot of stress all the time to keep things above board and as legal, completely legal and completely ethical. Mm-hmm. And that takes work and stress.
Yeah.
There's always a threat that they'll just stop paying.
So it seems like
there's a good number of good people here that rely on this job.
It seems like all of our caregivers and people who are in the industry, you guys are going to need some help yourselves if we don't get this thing settled down. You know, one of the things I want to share this with my listening audience about Chess. I met Chess in a meeting. That's about you. I'm talking about you like you're not here, but I need to give kudos.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I met Chess in a meeting.
I do have one or two more things I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Chess. Go ahead. I don't mind.
I got to say, there's still really a lot of resistance to medication treatment. There's a mistake that Suboxone is addictive. It is not. Uh-huh. I think I went through all those criteria. It only has one. And that's a withdrawal. All the others, the other nine, it does not have. So it's not an addictive drug by any means. And, of course, anybody out there on the street will know, nobody starts up with Suboxone, right? Uh-huh. They start up with other things. They use Suboxone to relieve the symptoms, whether they're using it on the street or at a clinic.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of resistance. We do not hear about medication therapy, so out there in the public, people just don't acknowledge it. And they always hear about the heroic 12-step and recovery stories, and unfortunately, a fair number of those great recovery stories end in death from overdose.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of regulation talked about that. I got to say, there's one more thing is officially. Right now, we have a police car sitting out and near the driveway, watching people come in and out. It used to be a squad car that we could see. It's in the last 2 or 3 weeks, there's been different cars left in the same place. These are the police watching us. They often stop our patients. We've had a few of them charged with DUI simply for using prescribed Suboxone, which does not impair driving in any way. You can read the book. Everyone seems to know a lot about Suboxone, more than the people that prescribe it. The non-prescribers are all experts in it. Anyway, I'm a little cynical there. But there are also clear models of what really works. The country of Portugal changed their direction of handling opiate addiction 20 years ago, and they've got a tiny amount of overdoses. And West Virginia, I've heard as many as 500 people die per million, which would work out to about 1,400 West Virginians dying. And in Portugal, about 25 people die a year, and they're a country that's three times as big as West Virginia.
Wow.
So anyway, you get the idea.
Yeah.
They have handled that problem, and pretty much everything else associated with drugs is vastly better than what we do.
Right. So it seems that this information is not foreign to the establishment here. And why do you think that the numbers
I wouldn't
are?
Say that. I would say there's resistance to it. I was talking to the police chief in Martinsburg about a year ago, and I said, do you know what's happening in Portugal? And he said, oh, yeah, I know all about that. I said, do you know about the overdoses, 3% of ours? Yeah. You know about this, and this? Yes, 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 and yes. But we can't do that here. It wouldn't work because they're so different than us, And that's what I hear. Well, we can't go there. We can't do that.
What did he mean? What do you think he meant by we're so different?
I have no idea. I can't tell you what he meant. He would just obviously just thought the idea of doing something that's been successful elsewhere wouldn't work here, or maybe half of his officers would be much less employed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do kind of know what you mean. You know? That's duh.
You get the idea.
So, you know, being employed is much better than being alive, I guess.
What I'm saying is there's a whole lot of economic reasons that we don't do the right thing here. And it's also a lot of economic reasons why we don't do the right thing in medicine in general.
Yeah,
I mean, we pay more for medicines than anywhere else in the world. Americans go broke about every 3 seconds from their health medical bills. Perhaps between around 30,000 Americans die every year because they can't afford their health care.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very different in other countries. So, and what are the, you know, well, the drug companies make a fortune and help the politicians get elected, and same with the insurance, et cetera. It's really pretty bad here.
Yeah.
And so there's economic resistance, and our drugs cost 10 times as much as elsewhere. So the Suboxone company might like it just like it is. They charge a huge amount for the medicine. Used to be very cheap. Used to be $45 a month for Suboxone. Now it's about $850, $900 a month.
For a strip or a prescription, or what do you mean?
About a month of two strips a day for a month is about $900.
Two strips a day for a month.
Yeah.
Those little strips that look like test strips for urinalysis.
Right.
It's even smaller than that.
Piece of
A little piece of paper with some medicine on it.
It's funny. I don't know what medicines look like. I have looked at Suboxone strips. It's a little brown square of gel, and you put it under your tongue, and it works.
Oh.
It doesn't work any better than the generic pill, of course. Mm. But right now, the state and the insurance insist that we use Suboxone brand and pay the whole money instead of about $180 a month for generic.
And they do the same thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, Doc. Wait a minute. Somebody's getting hoodwinked here.
Well, remember that the Suboxone company helped the politicians to get elected.
Okay.
Anyway, we've been on a while, James.
No. This is fine. We have a couple of...
What I'm hoping is that the media will start covering medication-assisted treatment, of that people will, you know, that there'll be a widespread acceptance of using this effective therapy.
Yeah.
Safe therapy and life-saving therapy, rather than frowning on it and giving stigma to people who are using it.
Yeah. So here on Recovery Radio, I'd like to ask you, how can we help in your getting your message out there? And what can we do as a partnership?
I would say that first of all, people with substance use problems should be active. They should vote. Number one, vote. Number one, find out the candidates who will help them and add to, you know, put more money into medical care in general and especially into drug treatment. 6 months ago, a bill passed the lower house of Congress and came 2 votes from being the law of the land that would have taken all funding out of Medicaid for drug treatment.
Wow.
And would have taken a whole lot of money out of Medicaid, period. So everyone would suffer. So they need to vote. Also, in any forum, if it's the town council is meeting about what to do about the drug problem, be there.
Be there.
Tell them what you need.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I need. You know, you're talking about me, so let me tell you what I need rather than you telling me what I need.
Yes, yes, yes.
Be involved.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Get out there and tell, you know, if you're using medication treatment, talk about it. Maybe go to a meeting and say, of course, there's always a danger going to meetings with being hit up to sell Suboxone or to buy drugs or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people are not in meetings for the best reasons.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So get the message out. It works.
Okay.
It helps. It's life-saving, and we should, more doctors should prescribe. Unfortunately, half the doctors that have a license to prescribe Suboxone don't do it.
Yeah.
And should. Mm-hmm. And more treatments and more people available for counseling. And I think we could make things a bit better, and more than a bit better, a lot better.
Yeah, a lot better.
But
I really appreciate you.
We still have to work on the illegality part of it.
Yeah, like
creating an illegal market, which is obviously dangerous for everybody.
Yeah, for Suboxone and everything. Got so many more questions, Doc, for you, but we've unfortunately run out of time, and I just want to thank you for coming on. I don't want you to be a stranger. Just let me know if you get some new information or some information, or if you didn't finish giving us all the information that you'd like to give.
Let me know. I wish you aren't on Tuesday, but I'd be glad to get back on again.
Yes.
I think we hear way too many repetitions of the old message and not enough of this one. So the more times you can talk about it, and I think try to be accurate about it.
Yes, yes. Okay.
You know, it's not a substitute for narcotics. It's a treatment for addiction.
Mm-hmm. That's
for opiate addiction.
Yeah. Medical assistant treatment.
Treatment, yes. And it is the standard of care
boards and bureaus, et cetera. Yeah. For SAMHSA and all the other things. Okay,
standard of care is to start with this. Even the police in Morgantown put out a report, public health report with Hopkins, that says, there's a great report. Maybe I could send you a copy of it. Number one,
I'm gonna have to end it right there.
Number two, get into medical care. Number three, get them on medication assistance.
Yep, Chess, I appreciate you coming on. We've run out of time, unfortunately. Be looking forward to talking to you again. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, James.
Bye.
See you later. Thanks for letting me speak so long. Bye-bye. To bring some loving here today, Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Judge us simply cause our hair is long. Oh, you know that we've got to find a way. Bring some understanding here today. Oh, oh, oh. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Ooh. Right on. Right on. Right on. Yeah.
right on.